The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to The Grade Cricketer on the Diamond Tina Podcast Network. Here we are, 2019. We've made it all the way to the fourth and final test match of the India series. India up 2 of their test match wins to 1 of Australia's test match wins. My name's Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Boys, it's a big show. We've got Jim Maxwell on. We've got Pete Lawler on the show as well. We're also doing rock some news roll resolutions at the end of the show. How are you feeling on this New Year's Day morning?
Oh, it's fantastic. Feel fantastic, he goes. Had a wonderful sleep. I only woke up twice. My 11-month-old was pretty good last night. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are just rolling around on couches, probably still drunk, maybe some other stuff, not sure. I'm just scrolling through socials, just looking to feel something, liking things, just anything to kind of get over that. And hopefully we can provide some content.
We're all looking to feel something as 2019 commences, and all of the Twitter feeds and social media feeds generally are filled with people giving their own toasts to the intangible thing that is 2018 and then saying how they're going to come and get 2019 or some shit. I'm feeling like this is a good show, he goes, because you know, the Australian cricket is in like another awesome, funny, like mini crisis again of its own making.
It's
like hand wringing, navel gazing, finger pointing, like generational warfare. It's great. It's right in our wheelhouse for this show. So hopefully we can get into it wild and free.
Long may it continue. I mean, in terms of timing, you know, our thing, there's nothing funny about Australia winning 17 test matches in a row. There's nothing
can
funny
I just
about us
spread
being
out
good.
The dysfunction, because there's too many things to talk about for us. Just like spread out the dysfunction.
Let's try our best here. But I mean, it seemed that things were going so well after the Perth win. We're like, okay, we've turned the corner. I'm not sure what the corner was, but everyone was happy again. Fuck me. Didn't that just turn around in the space of, well, first of all, let's talk about the pitch. The MCG pitch.
Yes.
Everyone stopped watching after the third over. I did when I saw Mitchell Stark's third ball just bounce 4 times through the Tim Payne. I thought, well, that'll do me for Boxing Day. Catch you in Sydney. This is going to be a draw. And because like we were sort of robbed of watching Australia demise because everyone stopped watching. So it doesn't count. So it's still 1-1 heading into Sydney live test.
Yeah, that's right. There was something about that, wasn't there? Like when the sort of ball bounced twice through to Tim Payne in the first over or something. There was something that kind of left in our mindset, like in our
viewers.
Spirit. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're at the game. People just stood up and walked out. It was very fourth grade. I think we've remarked on that before, you know, like the batting was really slow. There was, you know, funky field placings. There was kind of they were going 2 and over. What else was fourth grade? Peter Siddle was kind of mixing cordial for 147.1 overs.
I mean,
and
trying to
take
catches, you know, AFL style, trying to mark them.
That's right.
We're at the MCG, the home of AFL.
Mitch Marsh bowling like 115, Tim Payne up to the stumps.
A little short mid on there, keeping it funky. I did note, he goes, that like later in the test as the pitch deteriorated fractionally and they got a result. Like the they interviewed the MCC CEO, which is obviously the Melbourne Cricket Club CEO, Stuart Fox, who said, you know, everyone's gone a bit quiet about the pitch. He was a bit bullish about all the criticism that had kind of come out earlier about the wicket. You know, this is a disgrace. Boxing Day should be taken away from Melbourne. He said, everyone's gone a bit quiet now, haven't they? So he was, he had the chest out. I would like to say that, like, the wicket was still very ordinary beyond that. India were better, make no mistake. Yeah. India are a better side than Australia and exploited those conditions better. But like every discipline of the game was rendered more boring, less interesting than it would have otherwise been had the wicket like offered something.
And it wasn't just that the wicket offered nothing. It also aesthetically was really unpleasing.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when it's Boxing Day, you want to see bright colours on the screens. You want to see like a nice light coloured pitch and you want to see the ball carry through at least over, you know, chest height through the keeper in the first over. I've got none of that.
Yeah.
You know, the pitch looked really, really unappealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like cricket's the most exciting in like for instance the Wacker. I mean not the Wacker, sorry, Perth, even Adelaide, which is they both drop in pitches, by the way. Mm. And like, you know, when the keeper's like taking your fingers pointing up at shoulder height and the ball's doing around, it's actually exciting to watch. The fucking feather bed that they dished up at the MCG is like
but they always dish that up, mate.
It's like dishing it up.
And it is
and we
dished.
Said this to our Melbourne audience at our live show the other night, but all the other pitches around Australia have an identity. Mm. I mean even Optus Stadium has quickly forged the same identity as the Wacker because it's in that same geographical
Wild
area.
Horses, yeah.
But, you know, Melbourne is just the stadium experience. It's just 110,000 seats, not all of them occupied. Mm. You know, it's Boxing Day, it's theatrics, it's statues outside the stadium. The actual pitch is fucking rubbish.
There is an identity. It's fourth grade on a footy ground.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So Perth's quick. Sydney turns a bit on day five.
Yeah, Melbourne is AFL hosting a cricket match that's fourth grade.
Yep.
If the MCG didn't have Boxing Day, like, it would be even worse because, like, you do watch Boxing Day, first session for Boxing Day because you got your turkey, you got your ham.
Shane Warne's bang on about how great it is. You get those panoramic views from the sky, the drone footage of, you know, all the different stadia they have in Melbourne that we're meant to get excited about.
Mm.
I've stopped talking.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so
So just to extend your point here, guys, what you're saying is that, like, people are talking about taking Boxing Day away from Melbourne, but, like, Melbourne is so shit, it needs Boxing Day. If it's not on Boxing Day, it's going to be even more grim than it already is.
Yeah.
It needs that marketing kind of, like, that intangible marketing construct to help it along.
And they should be docked points for this. I'm looking forward to, you know, the ruling by the ICC on this pitch, and I want some heads to roll. Mm. And I remember...
Whose head specifically?
Well, I learned this week that a pitch takes years to forge its identity.
Right.
So, you know, the new curator, you know, he's new, he's young, he's young, but he's figuring out what this pitch means and he's watering it, and it takes a few years for the turf to attain this identity. So do we give him 3 years?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's what Australia's looking for at the moment, aren't they? Like, they're looking for that kind of, like, that buffer where we can kind of like lower our expectations to allow the rebuild to happen. So maybe the MCG pitch is kind of akin to the Australian cricket team.
You just want instant results, don't you? Mm. I mean, it's like when a new CEO comes into a company, a turnaround CEO, and it's like, give me 5 years, shareholders, let me put these plans in place.
Yes.
But I want a fast wicket immediately.
Mm.
How do we get that? We're bringing it in from Perth
or some shit.
But didn't like Australia's absolute capitulation in the second innings of the match kind of save the grace of the MCG pitch, because the only difference between this year and last year is that Steve Smith and Dave Warner aren't batting. I've got no doubt that Steve Smith has a temperament and the patience, you know, to bat the same way that Pujara did in the same way, in which case, you know, the third innings of the match probably starts late on day four. Mm. You know, Sir Alistair Cook scored 244 on, you know, one of the worst. I mean, so what I'm saying is that he should not be knighted based on 244 on a wicket that doesn't count.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I liked how, I think it was Piers Morgan came out on Twitter and slammed Alistair Cook for being knighted because he averaged 45. Like, Blake's fucking opening the batting and averaging 45 and has by about 4,000 runs, the most runs scored by an English batsman ever.
Yeah. I saw another good one because obviously that whole thing is going on in the UK at the moment. Lewis Hamilton.
Or Brexit.
What thing? Brexit.
Yeah, Brexit's going on at the moment.
So whole thing,
I mean, like the knighthoods and the MBEs and the OBEs and stuff. So Lewis Hamilton's just won his fifth Formula One World Championship, equaling record of all time. Five F1 championships, and he's been given an MBE who has the same qualifications as Paul Collingwood, who got 0 and 7 in the 2005 Ashes, who also has an MBE. So, like, I don't know what this means.
Mm.
What are we talking about? The wicket. Or the pitch.
Is it a pitch?
All right, so where to begin? Well, obviously Australia's batting. I mean, that's a thing that we need to discuss, I think. Like, who could have foreseen that it'd be this bad?
Oh, like, almost. Well, it's funny. It's kind of, there's a duality to it, he goes, because, like, on the one hand, we all knew and we could all predict beforehand that Australia's batting would suck this year. Not just because, like, it actually sucked before Smith and Warner even departed the side. I'm not even mentioning Bancroft there. There was the Hobart collapse. They've always struggled for runs and just run off the back of those two guys. Not that that's a bad thing, really, because, like, every side has people who score more runs than others. But, like, they've really been shown up this time. I mean, like, first things first, India are probably the best side in the world. Like, Jasprit Bumrah is probably the best quick in the world. 9 test matches, 48 wickets, averages 21.02. Ostensibly unplayable. And then you move to, like, the Aussie side, who now are talking, and we'll get into selections, and now talking about, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Like, Aaron Finch goes down to 6. Sorry, Finchie. Like, it doesn't matter where you bat. When you come out to play, Jasprit Bumrah's going to have the, it's like changing clubs. You know what I mean? I'm going to change clubs, put on a new lid, play at a new ground. You're still playing against all the same other clubs and the same players.
It's front,
yeah, and it's like you still got the same issues. Like when he bats
it's like having a really shit house and all this shit furniture and just moving the furniture around and thinking that the room's going to look nicer. It's
well, there's the a feng shui effect there. Room. Do you think there will be a feng shui effect of the Australian batting lineup?
The Australian batting lineup just needs to face east, and it will have better feng shui.
Let's give some praise to Jasprit Bumrah. I kind of think of a quick who's come out here who has been as good since like 90s Windies.
Yeah.
Honestly, I can't think of another quick, even like Steyn or Rabada, like in Morkel and their pomp.
I mean, they were great, those guys, when they came out. And then you've got the people coming out going, yeah, but they're playing against a shit side, etc. It's like, yeah, but that's what happens when you're a world-class player. You make people look really bad. What will be an interesting test is to see how we go against Sri Lanka, you know, who lost away to New Zealand by an innings and 1,018 runs.
But the worrying thing for me is that will, again, paper over our issues if we do go out and pump Sri Lanka in a two-test series.
And not only that, I mean, New Zealand are legitimately a strong side at the moment. I think the three leading run scorers in Test cricket this year are all Kiwis. Sri Lanka lost in England, against England in Sri Lanka, 3-0. Here we go. Top run scorers, 2018 tests. Nichols, Latham and Kane Williamson are the top three run scorers in 2018. Coley is fourth, fifth, De Villiers sixth, and then Angela Matthews seventh.
But frankly, you can have all of the numbers you like, he goes, until they do it in Australia, I won't believe it, as with India before this series. And I just apologise to our Indian listeners.
Yeah.
Before the series, I hand up, genuinely thought, although all of the data suggested otherwise, I was like, it's still pretty tough to play in Australia, the ball comes through your chest, you know.
You did say that.
A couple of guys will make some hundreds and stuff and we'll be fine.
That's why I'm saying it. Mouth being to the side. As it is now, speaking out of the side of your mouth.
Like many Australians, I spoke out the side of my mouth. Side mouth said, look, Australia should still do them, and that was wrong.
Isn't, the thing about, like, you say that it is hard because the ball comes through your chest. Like, the only wicket so far that Australia dished up was in Perth when it was like that, and we won the test match. Yeah. So, if there were any Indian-like conditions in Australia, it's that MCG pitch where it just doesn't get above your knee.
Yep.
I mean, that's really favourable. So, moving on to Sydney, if we can, starting in 2 days' time as we go to record this. Apparently, the wicket in Sydney's just as bad.
Yeah.
That's what the chat is.
Yeah, a bit because, we love...
Have we seen it? Have we had a sneak preview of what the wicket's looking like a few days out, which is always rife for speculation because so many things can happen.
Oh, it's a bit green.
There's always... Because the bloke hasn't mowed it yet.
Yeah, exactly. expect pictures of really green wickets. We've spoken to a few people who kind of challenge the notion that, Sydney stereotypically is this rank turner. Like, it might take a little bit of spin, but, evidently over the last few years it's also been pretty flat, pretty lifeless.
Second spinner chat about the SCG.
Yeah, and they've gone with a second spinner. And we'll get to that, which is hilarious in its own way. But, if ever there was a game where Kohli might make 250, and I'm sad they didn't make 499 against us because it looked like he might in Melbourne. It's going to be this one. Like, India, just all they need to do is park the bus.
Yeah.
Play for a draw and
Pujara
achieve history.
And Kohli. Yeah,
here's a controversial opinion for you. Like, I don't think Kohli's batted that well in Australia. If by his standards, you got 80 and 100 in this series already.
Well, we clearly have several plans to him, and he's the one that we're really, really focused on.
Mm. Yeah.
But Pujara, we just have not been able to get out.
Mm. And they've just added Agarwal to the...
Yeah, now he's good. He came from nowhere and now he's
just
good.
That's a generationally strong team. Like, I feel like India should consistently have just amazing teams. They've got a billion people idolise cricket. They love cricket more than I love it.
There's no like rugby league or rugby union market share fragmentation. It's just we fucking love cricket.
Yeah.
There's nothing else.
And there's so many people over there. Like, why don't they always have amazing teams all the time, non-stop?
Yeah.
We're a very small country. Have I just forgiven our sins there? Yeah. Well, can we talk about Marcus Labuschagne being added into the squad? Can we talk about that?
If we have to.
My only question is,
Was that typo?
Yeah.
An admin clerical error?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a just got
bowling,
out of hand.
He's a bowler now. He's got five shield wickets.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing. He goes he's a good luck to him, obviously. Good luck to the guy who looks like Jake Gyllenhaal in Jarhead. But he is like a jack of all trades when we need masters. or at least apprentice masters. You know, like, I'd give me apprentice masters over, like, this jack of all trades. Like, so have you guys read, like, Catch 22?
Joseph Heller? Heller, yeah.
Yes, this is like a classic Catch 22 situation.
Yossarian.
It is, yeah, with Yossarian. But, like, so Catch 22 is like a problematic situation for which the only solution is denied by a circumstance inherent in the problem or the rule, right? So, Labu Skagne has been picked as insurance for Quicks, right? He's the 10 to 15 over guy who provides the insurance against fast bowling injury.
Yep.
So instead, when he bowls, we're taking insurance. When he bowls, he saves Hazelwood and Cummins, Stark, etc., from bowling 35 to 40 overs if the Indians get away. He's doing that because they're protecting the Quicks against injury for the Ashes. So if you break that down, like, if we accept that we need fast bowler, like the fast bowler, we need our fast bowlers to win in the Ashes. And Labu Skagne is coming in to protect them, and yet we also accept that fast bowlers need runs to bowl at, and we're losing runs by picking Labu Skagne.
Meanwhile, insurance premiums are going up.
Insurance premiums are going up. There is your catch 22. What's the point of having having insurance if you can't have the runs to bowl at anyway? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know why Australia aren't picking their best batsmen in the country, because they're available. Like, they're all here. Like, no one's away.
That is why. See that, like, Justin Langer came out the other day and said, "Oh, you wouldn't want to be a selector right now. No one's putting their hands up."
Well, that's
people.
That's,
are raising their hands, but also there's no Shield cricket on, so that's a thing too.
Yeah, I see what Langer's saying. Like, no one is, like, just scoring bulk runs.
Oh, but I'd hate to be a selector. I'd hate be on that kind of coin. I don't know what picking blokes for a living.
I don't know what the deal is with, like. Like Joe Burns, Renshaw.
As in, like, you hate a circuit.
You hate a circuit, yeah.
Like Burns, Renshaw, Maxwell. Like, these guys who are surely ready-made for... And like, I was kind of saying to my mates the other day that, like, I think any name that you put up, you can immediately say, well, here's why you can't pick them. Here's the reason why you can't pick them, which is a problem in itself. But, like, for instance, Renshaw hasn't scored enough runs, but he's 22. And I think it's, like, given... It's, like, well accepted that he's going to play a lot of test match cricket. What's the point of playing Aaron Finch, who is how old? Opening 30, the batting, 32. He doesn't even open the batting for Shield. And like his teammates, Cameron White, saying like, oh, I don't know about Finchie opening the batting for Australia. It's not going to work out.
But
so,
mate,
but like, what's
you can
the
get
point?
Around him. You
what's
can get around him.
You can get around him.
He's a bloke that you can get around. And he'll in turn get around you.
So what's the point? And surely as well, if you're like a John Holland or an you know, Steve O'Keefe or a Ashton Agar, and you're seeing like Labu Skagne getting picked as a second spinner, you'd be thinking like, well, I should look at getting an internship at a startup because there's no one playing for Australia.
His specific selection is incredible in that sense, because it is just like the very like embodiment of bit part player. He is a very passable leg spinner with respect to him. He'd be the 10th best spinner in the country at best, and he'd be the 25th best batsman in the country at best. And we're going to put him out there in against a world-class number one side seeking history to somehow make a contribution. In all seriousness, like, the only reason he's the stress fracture selection. Like, he's genuinely guarding against injury to guys. So I see his selection as almost white flag raising from Australia, saying – the Ashes is more important than doing anything in this series. Like this whole summer has, and when you think about the Finch selection, etc., what they've tried to do is just get through, you know, pick guys who can just hold up an end kind of thing, minimize the damage. And they may well, maybe 3-1, maybe they walk away going, God, that was great. Like, well, you know, we didn't get absolutely hammered and now we're going to run against Sri Lanka.
I mean, I guess that we've never really encountered such crisis before in terms of selections. You know, back in the day, we just had to figure out who the next big thing was, and you'd slot them in at six, they'd learn a bit, 15, 20 tests, and then they were suddenly batting four, and you replaced whoever the legend that was averaging 55 was with that person, and then go on to Captain Australia. That was the blueprint for selection. Yeah. We're in uncharted waters here.
Yeah.
We're picking bit part players as insurance premiums.
Well, before the series started, we asked the question amongst ourselves and to also people who know what they're talking about, in that, like, what was it more important for Australia to win this series or to win the hearts and minds back? I think we're kind of getting the answer. You know, we're getting the Tim Payne chat up the stumps, and like, we're good blokes. We're
pushing
picking,
that
we're,
up,
we're picking, we're picking Finchie. You know, we're getting around him. You know, just like, it's just good blokes. It's just all good blokes. That's to your point, Pez, I think it is more important than actually winning this series.
Selection policy is really interesting, though, as well. Like, clearly they've decided just to kind of, not be too embattled, not to be destroyed too badly this series. I wonder, though, if they're working towards the Ashes, whether, like, they need to speculate to accumulate a little bit. Like, if we all accept that there's this patterned systemic issue around batting averages and that we don't, you know, the cupboard is bare, which is a metaphor which is just wrong in so many ways. Mm. As in, like, who designed the cupboard? Who fills the cupboard? Anyway, like, so what do you do? Do you kind of go, okay, like, let's just keep picking experienced guys who are going to be okay? Or is it time to try and find somebody who may not have the average at the moment at Shield level, but may be able to have the class or the talent to step up? There are a few guys there.
But how many times has there been someone who was mediocre at Shield level who came and turned out to be a wonderful test pick who played for many years? Has that ever happened?
Steve Waugh was one. Yeah, you know? Right. Like he wasn't great guns before they plucked him. I think there are, like, it's a truism in sport that there are people who can make the step up if you identify them early and stuff. Though I think Australia's problem has been that, like, Greg Chappell and his merry men have done that too much. Do you know what I mean?
His merry men are gleeful, subversive types.
His faceless
ruining
men.
Australian cricket. With a gleeful fucking look on their face.
I do think, given the malaise that they're in at the moment, like, it would be worth maybe one in the side. You know, like, why wouldn't you go into the Sydney test? If you're going to go jack of all trades, Labuschagne, why wouldn't you just see if you can get a batsman set for the Ashes or a bit of confidence? You know, maybe they they might fail against India, but then they have two tests against Sri Lanka. Pukowski, Sanger. Yeah. You know who's a good player who I really like? I like Alex Carey. You know, England picked three batsmen. Alex Carey has class. Right. You might say, okay, he averages 30.
I was saying that he goes before, like, until like a couple of weeks ago, I'd never seen him bat. Yeah. That says more about me not watching enough
cricket. Well, he's another failed footballer. And, you know, and that's what we are these days. That's what Warnie was.
Should we, I think we should probably have the conversation about, you know, we didn't have a podcast last week because we didn't fancy doing this on Christmas Day. The interviews of Steve Smith and Cameron Bancroft have occurred.
Right.
They've been, I wouldn't even say mixed reaction. They were sort of largely panned by certain ex-players. There's some speculation about why Bancroft especially did it. Why Bancroft? So for those who don't know what we're talking about,
do your own research.
Thanks for listening, but do your own research.
From under the rock you're living.
So people overseas probably wouldn't know what we're talking about. But Cameron Bancroft did an interview with Adam Gilchrist, sort of talking about his rehabilitation, his time away from, because Cameron Bancroft has now returned for the Perth Scorchers in the Big Bash League. So he's now back playing cricket. He had an interview with Adam Gilchrist, and the chat was that it was kind of an apology, non-apology. It was a bit of a weird one. He's now doing yoga. He was wearing a singlet. He had a very scraggly beard. He looked unusual.
He also paired that with a written piece to himself. You know, I got a couple of quotes here. It was, "Dear Cameron, today is a day that you will feel a sense of having lost everything, a day you literally used a piece of sandpaper on a cricket ball. I promise you it will be one of the most significant days in your life."
Literally is a great
A day you literally used a piece of sandpaper on a cricket ball.
Yeah. It's literal.
Remember when you did that? That was silly, wasn't it?
Yeah. So,
not figuratively, you actually did that.
Yeah. Is the reason that Smith and Bancroft have come out unprovoked because Dave Warner's got a grenade and he's going to drop it?
I mean, the fact that they came out on the same day does represent possibly a coordinated, strategic, preemptive strike to get out there, get that message out there. And Warner obviously hasn't said a thing yet. Will he say it? I mean, some news networks have been camped outside his eastern suburbs house looking for that grab. He hasn't bit. Would have been tempting. I'm sure there's a lot of current affairs style shows that have got blank checkbooks they would be prepared to write big numbers on that side of the story.
If he came out and just eviscerated everyone in the dressing room, like that's the end of his career. I mean, like,
it's Australian cricket and his career. It's nuclear.
Yes,
yeah, it's
exactly.
Mutually assured destruction.
I think Australian cricket would go back to being an associate nation.
Well, Afghanistan had a test.
That's right. Elevate, Nepal or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what would happen. Yeah, like the Smith and Bancroft public communication initiatives really looked like a case of like 17 PR people in a room deciding that, like, you know, starting the conversation was really important, and it was very poorly received for various reasons. Like Bancroft's interview was, like, firstly extremely soft, secondly a major word salad, you know, Waldorf salad, Cobb salad. It was just very difficult
also
to follow.
Also wearing a singlet as well, which I know you have strong feelings on.
I do. Yeah. I mean, he's worn a tank top, you know. And,
Rip Curl tank top.
I'm not Errol Flynn, but, you know, GQ says that it's a style landmine for men to do that. So I think, you know, the three strikes from Bancroft. Smith's, where do you start with that? I mean, the guy's trying to rehabilitate his public image and simultaneously sell mobile phones. Like, that's, I mean, multitasking, tick, that's great. Yeah. But he can play 360, I understand that. But,
I think it's good to see him back in work, personally.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's
It just, it's not that, it didn't diminish from him wanting to look authentic at all, the fact that he's flogging Vodafone at the same time, whose network he's struggling.
And when you're looking to rehabilitate your brand image, you should align with a telecommunications company, and the telco industry obviously being one of the least trusted industries, according to census data.
And in that recreation of his year where he spoke to kids and stuff and then was playing grade cricket, like it was, that was also inauthentic. The keeper's wearing short sleeve shirt. If you actually freeze frame, and someone maybe out there could do this, you freeze frame the very quick moment when Smith makes his ground in the ad from run out, and he looks like he's laboring a bit as he gets in there. Freeze it as the keeper catches the ball. Few things. Firstly, floppy hat, short sleeve shirt. How is that allowed? Thirdly, that he's taken it like symbols as well, so it's not first grade cricket. No, and then fourthly, he's wearing a red helmet, which I was hoping would be an IPL lid or something, but no, it's just a Vodafone lid without a
logo.
So I've multiple issues with that.
Okay, well that's covered. Any other points of discussion before we move on with the show?
I don't think so. I mean, the BBL is a thing that's happening, isn't it? Are we watching it?
I mean, Edos and I were talking on the cab ride over here, Pez. Yeah. And I'm just now talking to the listeners as well. But also just three of us in the room. But like, I honestly can't get into it. I don't know who's playing tomorrow. I don't know who's playing tonight. It's just on. You just turn on your TV and it's just on and you just watch it and it's a game of cricket. I don't know who's top. I don't know who's bottom. I don't know who's middle. I don't know who plays for who.
But I think that's part of the charm of it. You know, it just kind of passes you by. It's like the NBA. You know, there's so many games on that you don't need to follow, you know, what's happening until the finals kick around. And in the meantime, just enjoy the ride. Enjoy the experience.
I guess so.
There's three good sides in it. It's Adelaide, the Hurricanes and the Thunder are pretty good. But yeah, like talking to a few people, there's like some high level T20 exponents in there. And then there seems to be a lot of middling to lower level first class players having a bash and a laugh.
Well,
you know?
Mate, another thing as well is that like there's even low scores in that. It's like teams getting bowled consistently for 100. Like how fucking shit are we at batting just in every format that we just can't get over 100 in a fucking T20?
I don't know. Is Chris Lynn still hitting runs?
Oh, he hits a big ball, though, doesn't he?
Doesn't he?
Doesn't he hit a big ball? All right.
I haven't seen it for a while.
I just got his YouTube clips. All right, Pete Lawler coming up, and then after that, Jim Maxwell.
Boys, we've got the chief cricket writer from The Australian on the line. He's also a bit of a rock and roll aficionado, and you've seen him on Channel 7 as well. I'm, of course, talking about Pete Lawler. Pete, welcome to the show.
Hello, gentlemen.
Mate, it's all happening in Australian cricket at the moment. There's sort of like another, you know, mini crisis or navel-gazing kind of exercise going on. You're at the heart of this, clearly the most well-sourced journo in the country. What's actually going on? Explain.
Compliment then aggressive.
Yeah, thanks for that. What is going on? You know, I've been wandering around all morning. We usually hear from the selectors, don't we? But Cricket Australia has decided everything's like cash for comment these days, and print journos are the furthest down the food chain, starving for information. And we certainly didn't hear from Cracker Holmes, did we, about selection lately? I had a message from someone yesterday saying, how does Manus Labuschagne get in ahead of, why isn't anybody talking about blokes like Joe Burns and Matthew Wade? That was from another cricketer. And I said, well, we all are, aren't we, to a degree? I mean, we recognise that Matthew Wade has the averages, has a decent average anyway, but I like the idea of Manus Labuschagne. Is that what you're asking me? What's going on?
Well, averages are the old school traditional metric. I mean, that's dated. You know, now you know it's about being able to get around a bloke and all the other things that you can provide in terms of chat and you know, friendship.
The great intangibles, good haircuts, good political positions.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm happy with it.
Manus brings all of that, doesn't he? And a sort of multicultural thing to the team.
Yeah.
You know? If you can't beat South Africa, start signing up South Africans. he'd do anything to play for Australia. JL said that, didn't he? Which conjures up all sorts of Team America.
Yeah. Well, if that's
do anything is the kind of cultural thing we need right now. Yeah, win at all costs, play at all costs.
It always comes back to that.
Yeah. That's all it takes. I'm also available. Pete, you've said that you're a Marnus, you're pro La Bouchaine. Can you make a staunch argument for Marnus in the side? What's the case?
It's the vibe of it, man. Look, I think in the absence of anybody bashing down the door, you go for potential, don't you? You go for the Steve Waugh option. And he's a bit of a triple treat. What do you have? 2 wickets and a run out and something
sorts.
Else before he made his debut duck. I think, you know, if you're gonna have to go back to bloke who, like, you know, the difference between, you know, do you pick the bloke averaging 38 or the bloke averaging 37? Well, maybe you look for something else. And Marnus has a bit of spark about him, and he did very well last year in the Sheffield Shield, didn't he? He was right up there, just below Joe Burns, I might add. But I think the point that came from the cricketer that sent me a text last night was, is Matthew Wade and Joe Burns not being picked because they're not the sort of blokes that Australian cricket wants. And you'd certainly hope that wasn't the case, wouldn't you? Because, you know, being a shit bloke myself, I think shit blokes deserve opportunities too. Not that I'm saying either of them are shit blokes, but, you know.
Yeah. Equal rights for shit blokes. Yeah. I've always said that.
Equal rights, yeah. Shit blokes deserve a break.
I mean, yeah, they might not be bashing down the door, but they're certainly pressing, you know, aggressively on the door and trying to get in the door. Is that not enough, yes? Or do guys have to be scoring, like, triple hundreds to get into the Australian team? Because it's a different era now, isn't it? You don't have to do that much to get in.
Yeah, they went off. I don't understand why they're off Joe Burns, but you kind of need to sit down with a selector to say, you know, what are you thinking? You know what I mean? Everything's, it's a movable feast, isn't it? Like, who's going to open in Sydney? Would you guys open with
Pat Cummins?
With
Finchie? No, I don't. I don't think so. I think it's quite clear that his technique is fundamentally flawed to deal with the bowlers who bowl to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's the key job description.
Yeah. You've only got 3 tests, and then you're playing, the next test is an Ashes, isn't it? Yeah. In 4 tests, we'll be playing England.
Yeah, I'm frightened at the prospect of overcast skies, England having won the World Cup, and James Anderson and Stuart Broad having their final hurrah and nicking us all off for fun.
Duke ball moving around for 90 overs.
Get the gallows humour ready. Pete, you wrote a very interesting piece yesterday in The Australian, as we go to air, about the absence of reverse swing in Australian bowling. You compared it quite neatly to what India are able to achieve. It was data-driven. It seemed to be very well sourced, and I suppose this is my intimation, not yours, that since the suspension.
Hang on, that's because I stole the data from Quick Info.
No worries. Yeah, okay, cool. Who else do? Thanks for that correction. But I suppose the intimation, which is mine, is that since the trio have been suspended, the Cape Town trio, as we're calling them, we can't get reverse swing anymore. Can you give us a little insight into what's going on with reverse swing in Australian cricket?
It's weird.
Well, I think it's kind of like when you have those sort of bail conditions where you're not allowed to be around children anymore, isn't it? It's
no,
it's exactly like that.
I'm not talking from personal experience.
No, it's an ankle bracelet.
I don't even like children. But clearly what is going on, if we can get this back on track very quickly and perhaps hit the dump button on that maybe. When the umpires met at the start of the year, the first class umpires, they were told that by Cricket Australia in no uncertain terms that nobody goes anywhere near a cricket ball with a mint in their mouth. Nobody throws balls in the pitches. This is one of our highest priority issues this year. But so, you know, everyone's hypersensitive to this, aren't they? That, you know, what's his name? The new captain, Tim Payne, said going into the UAE match, they are going to be watching us and watching us. I mean, I think everyone would have trimmed their nails before they went out the ground. You know, because there's a hypersensitivity around reverse swing at the moment, and I get it. You know. they crapped in their pants. They're going to have to, you know, live with the smell for a while.
Oh, my God.
And I think I say in that article, it's like finding an acceptable level of aggression. You know, they struggled for about four, it took them about five tests to find an acceptable level of aggression.
Mm.
You know, and Tim Payne led the way. I mean, we all read too much into it, but what else are we going to do? Because we've got to fill space, you know, in his clash with Coley.
Yeah.
But the same with reverse swing. I mean, I just don't think that they're just too scared to put much effort into it anymore. But it used to be the highest priority. There used to be meetings about reverse swing. There were hard and fast rules around handling the ball in Australian cricket, you know. Nobody with sweaty palms was allowed to touch the ball. It always went back to David Warner. You had to be very careful that only certain people could throw it in on the bounce because they knew how to hit the right side and rough it up.
Wow.
It was a science. And I'm told that at the end of games, sometimes Warner was applauded for his ball maintenance.
Like how so? Like they sung a team song or something for him? Like
One of the three best on ground. I just love the visual.
What song we're doing for the ball maintenance guy?
Yeah.
I just love the visual, Pete, of a team of players lining up before the match and showing their fingernails to the referee. It kind of reminds me of like schoolboy rugby where you had to line up and show your studs.
Yeah.
Just to show that you hadn't serrated those on the...
Pete, I want to ask you. Like,
I reckon every team in world cricket, if you lined them up and looked at their fingernails before the match started, you'd be able to work out which guy was in charge of ball maintenance by the length of his thumbnail.
I'd watch that more than a bat flip.
They did a lot of work on their thumbnail.
Mm. And which players do coke?
It's gone well.
I want to ask you about
not many people listen to this, do they?
No.
It's very small.
We've only got two sponsors.
We won't have a recording, so we're just having a chat. We just want to have a chat with you, Pete.
Yep.
This final test match in Sydney, the fourth test here, how fired up will Australia actually be to stop India winning the series? Or is it just a sort of a given that India and Bumrah are just going to roll through us again?
Given.
I think Langer would be fired up, wouldn't he? But you'd have to ask the individual players. I mean, how many of them would be fired up to save their own asses?
That's a good point.
You know, I'm sure the bowlers would want it. I know Tim Payne would want it because you can tell, like, Tim Payne's a very competitive little bastard. And they'd be fired up for sure. It was only a test to go that they won. So I don't know why everyone's being so negative in the newspapers every day, but starting with me. They're going to be fired up. They're going to be fired up because they've got to prove themselves, and I reckon it's a little bit of a cut-off point, isn't it, for this squad as to whether you play the next two tests against Sri Lanka and then if you've held your name up for an Ashes tour. So they're going to be fired up.
Pete, a whirlwind conversation, as usual. It's been a pleasure having you on for the first time this season. You can catch Pete's writing in The Australian. Again, he's got more people in his phone book, I think, than anybody else in Australian cricket. And he's also a colleague of ours on Channel 7 as well. So we're just talking to a colleague. Thanks very much for joining the show.
The big red train, I think we refer to it.
Oh, is that right? So did they give you a pin? We haven't been given a pin. The Channel 7 pin?
No, we didn't get a pin either. I think, we're the little red caboose at the back of the big red train. But,
very good. All right, Pete. Thanks very much. We'll catch you. We'll catch you next time.
Okay. Thank you. See you, Sam. See you, David. See you, Ian.
Our friends at Budgie Smuggler want us to talk about custom smugglers week. So for the last few weeks, we've been talking about what you could get for Christmas, a bit of fashion wear, non-smuggler material as they're branching out, diversifying. But this week it's about custom smugglers. Design whatever you want, put it on the smuggler itself.
So you take control of the situation.
That's right. It's bespoke. It's bespoke smugglers.
Okay. Bespoke artisan.
I like the idea of taking control of my swimwear. I'm not going to lie. I have very little control outside my life. You know, you guys tell me what to do. You know, intro, outro, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Dance, monkey, dance, what you guys do. So I like to control.
pulled a funny face. It's bad for radio. Yeah. You like to control your own material. You might put your own face or your own bicep, for example.
Why would I put a bicep on my own smugglers? I don't know. Because you can?
Yes.
Because I can. It's custom. Do whatever you want.
I mean, I'm excited by this new development. I mean, for so long I've been wearing boring swimwear. I've been wearing black Speedos. I've been wearing, you know, Southern Cross boardies. Wore those for a while until the Cronulla Riots thing happened. That was awkward. But now I've got the opportunity to put a bicep on my smugglers, which excites me and also strangely arouses me.
Yes. I don't know a lot, but one thing I do know is that Budgie Smuggler would have wanted to say a rival company's name and also Cronulla Riots.
Yes, that's exactly right. But the main thing that we're saying is... custom smugglers. Any picture you want could be a face, could be a bicep, could be a list of things that you would like to have in 2019.
Just a shopping list. Just a list of things you need to get from the supermarket. Bread, eggs, margarine, toilet paper.
All of these things can go on your smugglers or smuglets. That's budgiesmuggler.com.au. Custom smugglers, get around them. Well, this is a special one, boys. The man we have on the line will already feel familiar to many listening on the show. When we talk of cricketing numbers on the show, especially when it comes to matches, rarely does it surpass the 100 or 200 mark. But while he, like us, has made precisely zero runs in Test cricket, he's seen and called more of it than just about anybody on the planet. Last week, we all celebrated his 300th Test match call, and I say we advisedly as he's an absolute doyen of the commentary circuit. Kerry O'Keefe was right when he said he's the voice of cricket in Australia, and frankly, I'm going to stop talking because we all want to hear it in its velvety glory. I'm, of course, talking about the ABC's Jim Maxwell, not just a caller, but also heavily involved in Sydney grade cricket as East's Cricket Club president, who we welcome onto the grade cricketer for the first time. Jim, hello.
Nice to be on the show. Thank you, Sam, for the welcome. That's very nice of you to say those things, and the people have been very warm and giving with their reaction to listening to me over all these years and putting up with it and so on. So having Kerry in the box the other day with Harsha Bogle was a real reminisce, a lot of fun, very nostalgic, and it just shows that when it comes to cricket, you don't have to talk about the game at all to enjoy yourself.
There's so many places to take that conversation, Jim, but let's just be one-dimensional and go to Sydney grade cricket, where you are the East Club president. Like, at the risk of alienating our own audience, can you tell us your relationship to grade cricket and, in fact, why Sydney grade cricket is better than any other competition?
Well, we need to be careful here, because it's Premier cricket now. That's what Cricket Australia have said, that every competition around Australia it has to be called Premier Cricket. So we better stick to that, I suppose, and be politically correct. But whatever we call it, district, grade, premier, it probably is the number one. Then again, there might be a few too many clubs. I'm not sure if all of them are solvent or able to produce their own talent in the way some clubs can do. I can only speak for my own club, because East is fortunate to be where it is. So it's on the edge of a fairly affluent society, so that makes sure we get good sponsorship, and cricket's a very expensive game. So you need the sponsorship, otherwise you can't survive. And what you need more than that are the volunteers, and that is the mob at the coalface of cricket who don't get the recognition they should are all those people who do these jobs every week or do the whole season without getting a cent other than a bit of the sausage sizzle or something. I got involved 5 or 6 years ago, although I'd always been connected with the club. I never played for them in my youth. It wasn't easy to play for Easts or Waverley in those days. I think being a good Cranbrook boy like the rest of my mates, who could play reasonable cricket, we just felt there was, this is a bit awkward to say, just going back so far, but there was a little bit of a bias. So we went off and played City and Suburban, which is still a lot of fun. In those days, the old Cranbrookians Cricket Club was everywhere. Played three teams every weekend. Now they're lucky if they play one team a week. So that's the way the society has changed, I suppose. But and we had, you know, lots of very good players. Jerry Tiedemann in particular was the best from Sri Lanka, Ceylon,
right,
going back all those years. He bowled left arm spin and batted, and he played in the New South Wales schoolboys team with Jeff Thompson. So that was the kind of player who was around in that period. But 5 years ago, I was asked by someone who was on the committee to stand as president. They felt the club needed some kind of shake-up.
Mm.
So there was a putsch, and it was a very controversial AGM.
Right.
I was actually watching Australia play in England in 2013. I was down at Hove when all this happened overnight. And a fellow called Max Abbott, who's now involved with the promotion, the T20 World Championship coming up in a year's time, sort of kept working away at me. And anyway, that's what eventuated. And to be honest, it's more of a delegation role than a hands-on approach, because I'm not around all the time. But I've got some very good people on the committee. Peter Lovett, in particular, whose name may ring a bell because he's a manager agent for a number of players apart from his other work. So, right, in a nutshell, that's it. And it's a very well-run club with an incredible facility, probably the best-looking grandstand anywhere in Australia for a club ground. And if you want,
right,
fellas, if you're listening out there in grey cricket, if you want a decent pavilion, get your current one condemned. That's the way to do it. And once it's condemned, you can then go in and dip into the largesse of local government, state government and federal government, which we did to the tune of about $6 or $7 million to build this extraordinary place.
How about that?
Right. We're very lucky, very thankful to the taxpayers for being so generous.
Just a telling insight into the mind of a club president. And I feel like you might have been soliciting some sponsorship opportunities just then with that wonderful overview of the health of East Cree Club. Jim, let's go back a few years earlier, just to kind of growing up, being a young man, obviously, you know, in an affluent eastern suburbs and coming across the game of cricket. I think I remember reading that your father took you to the SCG around the age of 10, and that was kind of your first introduction to cricket. Is that kind of, you know, happy childhood memories of going to the cricket with Dad, you know, maybe a few throwdowns in the backyard, maybe, you know, fetching him a beer during the cricket? Or what was the kind of relationship there and kind of the way that you got into cricket?
Well, the idea of throwdowns hadn't come to that generation. It was a bat and a ball.
Right.
It was a hard ball. And my father used to bowl wrist spin of some sort to me in a backyard that was probably about 15 yards long. So it was a short pitch, and there were windows. So you had to place your shots, otherwise, you know, you ran out of pocket money pretty quickly. So we then, after this experience with my father, as kids who lived in the area, we moved onto the street. And we did what so many other people do to make sure the cars weren't smashed to pieces. We used a tennis ball. We shaved it, and we dipped it in a bucket of water.
Right, so ball tampering.
As much. Yeah, ball, it was. Exactly. Yes, and all ball tampering should be legalised.
We've always said that.
Decriminalised, yeah, like marijuana.
Yeah. That's right. The game would be much better for it. It was, you know, for better part of a century, with people doing what they wanted to with the cricket ball. So that's pretty much how it started, and a love for the game grew out of that. I think if I go back, I was 8 or 9 when I was sent to boarding school, even though we lived a mile from school, and the arrival of the West Indies in 1960-61. And they came to Cranbrook because Cranbrook was always a place where visiting teams, good players, wanted to come and practice, because the pitches, I'm telling you, they were as good as any you've ever seen. There was a little green-fingered gnome called George Eccles, who was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
He'd make pitches like the one in Jamaica. You could see your face in it. It was so strong.
Get it out of the MCG.
Time he brought the mud up and everything else. Anyway, and I saw the West Indies, and, you know, being a kid who lived in the eastern suburbs, We didn't see anyone who was other than white every day of the week. So to see these fellas and the way that they so engaged with each other and had so much fun, that's what the West Indies of that period was about, because of no money in the game. And that sort of boosted my interest in the game, I suppose. And then playing the backyard cricket with my old friend Tim Cohen. We used to play a lot of test matches at his place, Vaucluse or up at Mona Vale and the rest of it. So there was a whole history there of us playing cricket and going to the cricket with a scorebook, which made you concentrate, and scoring a shield game. Games were big in those days. You didn't have test cricket very often, and you often had seasons where there was nothing but shield cricket, if you were lucky enough to be able to get out there. So that was the introduction, I suppose,
Jim, let's talk about some of your... I mean, you've seen 300 test matches, literally 300 test matches you've seen, so you've sort of seen it all. And there's been a lot of comparisons recently in terms of, like, where this Australian team is compared to, say, like, the early border years in the 80s or even as recent as 2011 when Ricky Ponting was captain. And it's certainly a weak side. There's sort of no debating that. But where do you see this Australian team ranking in terms of, like, some of the worst, perhaps, that you've seen?
Oh, I think it's unfair to compare because there's been such an upheaval in the last six, 9 months. And so I think we need to wait until things settle down and these players, if they are going to come back and they're still good enough to play, can do something with the side. Yes, I'd say that if you want to compare, yes, it's as weak as... some of the sides around World Series cricket, and when Bob Simpson and then Graham Yallop, they're around the team. So, at times in the mid-80s, it wasn't too good before Bob Simpson took over as coach, and he brought a rigour to the organisation and management of the team that had never had before. And he probably deserves more credit than almost anyone else for the reshaping of Australian cricket that took us up through that period. 1989, and then Warne and McGrath coming in, 16 consecutive wins. And that was a huge period. Lots of talent, depth of talent, and it was nurtured properly, which sadly it isn't being now.
It's interesting when we talk about where Australian cricket is at, Jim. I mean, you're a custodian of obviously East's cricket and New South Wales cricket as well. And, you know, it's often said, it's almost cliche now that when New South Wales cricket is strong, Australian cricket is strong. And, you know, notwithstanding the fast bowling attack, which is sort of exclusively New South Wales, it's been a bit of a long time between drinks for the Blues. Haven't won a shield in quite a while you know, produced a batsman of great standing probably since Warner and Smith as well. Do we need to look a little closer at where cricket is in New South Wales specifically? Can you give any insights into, you know, how you think the state is going in terms of cricket?
Well, there's plenty of talent around. I mean, if you turn the television on every night, you'll find someone from New South Wales who's doing better than you'd think. I was looking last night, Sam's. Plays from Randwick.
He's a good player.
Well, he's come from nowhere. Mm. And there are a few of those guys, not necessarily from New South Wales, but the talent's around. But, you know, it needs to sort of fall into the right area so it can develop. I mean, the obvious problem with the game at the moment is with all this concentration in mid-season when audiences are up for TV, it's all about T20 cricket. And, you know, that's fine. That has its place. But it's very hard to produce batsmen who can defend. John Benno talked to me about this 2 years ago. He said this proliferation of T20 cricket, which is now down to Poivern grade cricket and all sorts of levels of cricket to school, that's fine in its way. But if you want to teach batsmen how to play in innings and understand that if they don't survive, they mightn't get a hit for a while, unlike T20, you come back tomorrow. Well, you know, you've got to start thinking differently about how you develop your cricketers. But I don't know whether you can stop the momentum of T20. It's like Spanish flu. I mean, it's hit us hard. And we've got to go with it because commercially, that's the way the game is going, it seems.
It's funny, Jim, because it's an interesting analysis. I think a lot of people have pointed to the rise of three-format cricket or T20 cricket and perhaps the lessening of rigour around defence when batting, when pointing to why Australia can't score runs. I suppose the slight hole in that, from my point of view, is that other countries seem to be able to manage it. What are other countries doing better than Australia in relation to managing three-format cricket, specifically in relation to batting?
Well, I'm not sure whether they are, or whether it's just the luck of it. It helps, I suppose, if you can sort of delineate one season from the other. But, you know, in a place like India, where, what are they playing, 37 teams in the Ranji Trophy, you're bound with that number of cricketers to come up with someone, as they have just the other day with Agarwal, who came from nowhere, as it were, although he had good numbers in first-class cricket and he was able to play for India. And I think one of the issues at the moment around Australia, I mean, if you put Warner and Smith in there, you'd shore up some of your inadequacies. But, you know, they haven't stuck with blokes like Renshaw's been put through the washer a couple of times and seems to have been thrown away. Mm-hmm. And Burns has got enough runs to be selected. But in recent years, they like hunch bets, like Hilton Cartwright. Remember 3 years ago?
Remember, I think so, yeah. I think I remember him.
I was talking to Ed Cowan about this the other day. I said, what was the story there? Oh, he said that was another one of Pat Howard's crazy ideas. we're going to give Mitch Marsh a kick up the arse. So, well, we're going to put this bloke in just for this test, and then Marsh will come back.
So he was like a teaser horse, Hilton Cartwright.
So, and Ed said to Pat Howard, "Well, what happens if this bloke actually comes off? What are you going to do then?" He said, "Oh, well, we'll think about that if it happens." But you know, there's been, you know, like Ferguson and many played one game, and I mean, you can go over the history of it, I suppose, and find those one test wonders. But there just doesn't seem to have been much of a policy, and now we've moved to the Manus Lavashanya all-rounder. Well, Johnny Watkins is a better leg spin bowler, and he couldn't even land it on the pitch when he made his debut at the SCG in 1973. I mean, fair dinkum. The bloke's a bit of this and a bit of that, and he's probably a nice fella. As Kerry O'Keefe was saying to me the other day, Justin Langer likes nuffies, but he needs to look at blokes who've got some ability and stick with them. And at the moment, it's just a bit all over the place, isn't it?
It is, Jim. Yeah. We'll move into the throwdowns component of this interview, Jim, where, I just apologise in advance, really. Hopefully you enjoy it. If you don't, you know, just let it through to the keeper or hang up on us. But let me kick off. Jim, what was the worst moment you've witnessed in cricket? David Warner's involvement in Sandpaper Gate or his defection from East to Randwick Petersham while you were East Club president?
To be honest, I wasn't unhappy about him going to Randwick. We probably had enough. But, you know, that was unfortunate when you think back to the time it actually happened. But I'm anxious to find out exactly what Warner is going to say about this, if and when he ever spits it out. And I'm hearing that he's now allied himself with James Erskine as his manager. And Erskine has said to him, I gather, that I will only look after you if you tell me exactly what happened in Cape Town. So I think there's another story to come. Be prepared.
I cannot wait for that Sunday night exclusive on Channel 7. Jim,
hopefully Warner's going to do it and not his wife.
Yeah.
Agreed. Leads me to my next question. Jim, you've lived in Sydney's eastern suburbs your entire life, a breeding ground for some of Australia's greatest names. How does it feel to live in the presence of some of cricket's most influential figures like Steve Smith, David Warner and Roxy Jasenko?
Yes. I don't know whether she'd get into the girls' team yet. She's got to learn how to play a few more shots that pierce the field at the moment. They keep being stopped, I think, by people who've got a brain And you know, sick of all the nonsense that goes on around it, like the Kardashians, all these would-be's if they could be. Look, I was at school with a lot of influential people. Some of them ended up in jail, like Rodney Adler and Andrew Sothopoulos. Others went on to bigger things. James Packer and his father, Kerry, they're at my old school. Yeah. Who else do we have?
Ed
Murray
Callum.
Rose, of course, could swim a bit. Gary McDonald, very good actor.
Yes.
And there have probably been some brilliant people in the field of science and other areas of life that sporting people tend not to see. But, we've been lucky enough in the last couple of years to produce two test cricketers, which is also a bit of an eastern suburbs thing. Ed Cowan on the one hand and Will Somerville just recently on the other.
Around the show.
So given, you know, my cricket education at the school and everything else, it's very pleasing to see that development from a school in the eastern suburbs that produced a lot of talented sportsmen, but most of them ended up as doctors or lawyers or in some other vocation because there was no money in the game then.
Very good. I actually went to school with Gus Warland, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Jim,
you went to Knox.
I did. Yes.
Yeah. So welcome to the Sydney Cricket Show.
We don't like to talk
about Chris Green, he's going well.
Yes. He is, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah. One of the real pin-ups of the BBL.
Good looking.
I'm talking about Gus Warland. Jim, you learnt your art in broadcasting from the indomitable Alan McGilvray, a chain-smoking, hard-drinking character who'd head straight to the bar after each 20-minute stint in the commentary box. Is this why you've managed to become a successful club president?
Well, my liver has managed to survive for 68 years, which is an achievement in itself if you go back to my early history with the aforementioned doyen of cricket broadcasting, Alan McGilvray, who, yes, he was hard to keep up with. I mean, a bloke who smoked 80 fags a day and drank a lot of cordial was a remarkably durable character, kept broadcasting till he was 75. So I wouldn't like to think that I've emulated him, but I've probably taken a leaf out of his book.
So do you kind of, are you the circuit leader in the grandstand team, or is there someone else who's stepping up to the mantle?
That's a very good question.
Thank you.
Because I said to the ABC some years ago, I said, where's your succession planning? Not just in terms of who's going to do cricket, but a few things. So I think the question is still out there, which is probably the reason why, having retired from the ABC in July, I'm still doing the cricket on the radio.
You might be on the phone to the incumbents now. Jim, this is kind of on the same note. We're trying to get a sense of the grandstand atmosphere inside the box there. And this is a bit of a long question, so sort of stay with me. In his 2005 Andrew Olley media lecture, John Doyle, better known as Roy from Roy and HG fame, like, he gave a wonderful speech that anyone interested in media should listen to. He talked about a time in the late 50s where he and his family would sit around the lounge room at night letting Arch McCurdy guide them through some New York jazz. A cigarette company sponsored Arch, and in the words of Doyle, with voice alone, he fashioned the smoky atmosphere of a New York jazz club. I've often felt the same about you on Grandstand, like with great stories of events the evening prior, filled with good red, you know, letting the atmosphere wash over the listener. My question is, as with Arch, and I mean this respectfully, you know, how much red wine really is consumed on Grandstand, and is it good red?
Some of it is. I'd like to think at the moment most of it is, because part of my melanness, as it were, as a human being, and in terms of my voice getting a little deeper, has come as much from that as getting older. I'm certainly not smoking like Alan McGilvray and Arch did. Sentimental Journey was the name of the show on the ABC in my early years that Arch did. And I, you know, I used to talk to him quite a bit. And he had a lovely, intimate style of broadcasting, which McGilvray did too at his best. And what these guys did, which is a bit lost, particularly when you hear blokes babbling over the top of each other on TV these days, is the art of the pause. no one cares about a pause anymore. It's how many words you can pump out, even if you are over the top of someone else. So I yearn for those days. I'm very nostalgic about the condition of cricket, and we're not going to go back to that, obviously. And these are fine athletes and all the rest of it, but I really think as the game moves on, if it's to stay alive, if it's to be meaningful, worthy, it's Test cricket that matters, and the other stuff is, as I call them, frolics. One day cricket's okay, but the rest of it, you can take it or leave. But you'll find 100 million people out there who love the T20. So I don't want to have an argument with them about what's important, what matters.
I love that we've managed to squeeze in a reference to New York jazz, and smoky bars, and red wine on the Grey Cricket podcast. Reminds me a lot of the interview we had with Brad Hogg.
My goodness.
Yeah, Hoggy loves his jazz. He's Duke Ellington. Jim, I think you've left us with some pearls of wisdom and some of our listeners as well. It's a total honour for us to chat with you. We look forward to listening to you cover the Sydney Test starting in a couple of days as we go to Ware and beyond. Congratulations on 300, calling 300 Test matches and just generally being an absolute doyen of Australian cricket.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. And a suggested reading for all the commentariat out there who follow the Great Cricketer, I must tell you, you should get a copy of 10 for 66 and All That by Arthur Maley, which is one of the most delightful, whimsical cricket books you'll ever read. So grab a hold of that. That's my New Year recommendation.
Ever looked for a new club online? Have things ever gotten so grim that you'd consider moving interstate or even overseas just to continue your fledgling amateur career in a slightly higher grade? Bravago compares prospective clubs from various competitions, grade cricket, shire stuff, even Yuck Park cricket, where the home ground has a tree on the field. Over 10,000 different clubs across the world, ranked according to criteria such as professionalism, pitches, and tee spreads. Instead of searching for hours, Bravago makes it easy for you to find the perfect club in minutes. Just go to our website, type in where you want to go, when you want to go, and press search. It's that simple. We don't care why you want to go, how old you are, what you averaged last season, or whatever else you're running away from. We just want to help you get there. Best of all, Bravago even allows you to search based on how shit the blokes are. Filter according to Spirit of Cricket rankings in order to find the club with the least amount of self-respect and therefore the best cultural fit. With just a couple of extra clicks, you can get a real insider's look at your potential new club. Will a good-looking 30 get you instantly promoted up a grade? Was their club song penned by alcoholics? Is their major sponsor an Asian massage parlour? How many used syringes are typically found in the grandstand on a Saturday morning? Has the club president previously been indicted for tax evasion? And so much more. And that's how you can be sure you find your ideal club in time for the new season. New club, Bravago.
It's that time of the week again. The first one of 2019, hashtag AskTGC. Before we do, I just want to thank everyone who came to the Melbourne show at the Corner Hotel the other day.
Terrific.
Second day of the MCG test match, the BoxNet test match. Absolute bumper crowd, sold out. 250 people in the room. It was awesome. Ed Cowan, special guest. He was on fire. It was awesome. That's following on from Adelaide and Perth as well. We've already sold out our first Sydney show, which is on the first day of the Sydney test match on January 3. But our tour company have been so kind as to organise a second show the following night, which is Friday night, which is infamously a better night for a circuit. So that's day two. Bring a mate. There are tickets available. It's a whole new show. I've already sold, I think, a bit less than half the tickets already. Yeah. So they'll be swept up quickly, I'm hoping, anyway. So if you're in Sydney, you fancy it, bring a mate along. It's going to be awesome. Ed Cowan actually can't be the guest.
What are we going to do?
Well, what we did was we reached out to a colleague.
Right.
And Ricky Ponting wasn't available, so we got the scoreboard guy, Trent Copeland. Trent Copeland is going to come on as our special guest for the second show. Great guy, funny guy as well.
Probably also, higher profile than Cowan these days anyway.
Higher profile now. Yeah.
We'll open him up. He's the new data analytics guy on Channel 7.
Yes.
Yeah. And those guys can typically be pretty dry, but we've had a few conversations and we've heard a few stories about TC, mm-hmm. as we're calling him now.
Mm. He looks really good in his suit as well, in person. Yeah. He's very sleek and, the bloke could genuinely go to the Ashes next year. Also, if he bowls,
either as commentator or as a player,
as commentator or
he's
player,
a double threat.
Exactly.
He's at the player game first. He's just swanning around on Channel 7. I mean, who isn't doing that at the moment? Okay, so get tickets. You know, where you get tickets from. Do your own research. There's also, we are going to be in Brisbane and Canberra. Everyone's asking, why aren't you going to Brisbane? Well, clearly, we're following the cricket, so we will be in Brisbane the night before the first test match of the Sri Lanka series, because that's a day-night test. So we're on the night before day one in Brisbane. Then also we go to Canberra to wrap up our national tour for 2018-19. Tickets, same place. Come along, get round us. We appreciate you guys listening so much and coming along to the shows. They're great fun. They're hopefully really funny for you guys as well. And we have a great time. So let's move on to hashtag AskTGC. Pez, we've only got one. Then we're going to do a little bit of a news resolutions.
Yes.
So I'll throw it to you.
Okay, I'll just read this one. This particular question came in from a guy who asked that his name be withheld. Mm-hmm. So I hope that...
I love it when they retrospectively do that
as
well. That's right. You see it like a few hours later. Oh, can you just not get on those?
Yeah. I'm actually on a watch list. Yeah.
Kind of makes sense. Watch list is on the right thing. I'll read it out. Hi, guys. My dad never came to watch my matches. Neither did yours. My mates, neither did yours, he adds. My mates didn't either. But is this a valid excuse? He was a local policeman and had arrested several of my friend's teammates. One was for assault on the circuit, another for printing fake banknotes that were used during the circuit, another was found hiding in a skip following a low-speed chase after drink driving. He didn't come to the games to avoid coming face-to-face with these degenerates. Is this good parenting, keeping his distance, or a horrific lack of judgment? Cheers.
One of the better questions we've had involving criminal activity. Well, obviously, this says a lot about the person who's written in because he's obviously associated with low-level criminals, which is ironic given that his dad is a copper. I don't know.
It was his mate. It's his mate's dad who's a copper. So it's kind of like this thing's too removed.
Oh, his mate's
removed.
Dad. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. His mate's obviously whose dad is the copper who hasn't come to watch his game has gone, look, can you actually just ask the great cricket? Ask the great cricket guys what they think about this? Yeah, is my dad a good parent for prosecuting some of my low-level criminal teammates?
Fake banknotes is, that's quite devious.
I've never heard of that. You know, sometimes it's fruitful, pardon the pun, to, put avocados through his potatoes in the self-checkout at Coles, but I've never heard of cricketers creating fake banknotes, like proper counterfeiting. I think that's a federal offence. That's not a state offence. That's an AFP thing.
Yes.
Well,
nothing funny about that. I'm just pointing out the difference between federal and state law.
Thank you.
Once again, we haven't answered the question and we just spoke amongst ourselves. Okay, so we'll move on to some New Year's resolutions. We threw a tweet out there yesterday which read, anyone got any New Year's resolutions they want to share? Publicly, mine is to score one good-looking 30 in third grade to get into contention for the test team. Privately, I just want my dad to come and watch me play. So that was the preface of the tweet that we sent out, and we asked for some feedback of what other people's New Year's resolutions may or may not be. So I'm just going to scroll through several social media, so I apologize if it's a little bit disjointed, but we'll start off with Lincoln Powell, who says publicly mine is to get in at 5 for 40 and chase down the target of 150 with a gritty 20-odd, 15 not out, while the guy at the other end who can play an offside shot peels off a vintage 80-odd. Privately, I just want to throw out some banter that the slip cordon actually laugh at. I think that leads to a question of like what Tim Payne's done, in the last couple of test matches with his chat to Rishant Pant and Pujara, etc., Coldy as well. Is that being, mimicked out in the local club fields around Australia?
Yeah,
considerably more expletives, one would imagine.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. Anyway, we'll keep scrolling through.
The pain stuff, it's just on the pain stuff, is it starting to get a bit vanilla? I'm just throwing it out there. Early on, it was welcome. It was welcome to have a return, to just see what, appropriate on-field conversation sounded like. Just a departure from the kind of previous era, boorish swearing with no backup, muscular swearing and stuff. And now it's getting scripted.
It's copywriting.
It feels like the Fox producer's going, Payne, 31st over. We're turning the sound up, so then he gets the message.
I think two prong. I enjoy the chat. I think it's pretty good chat. I think there's that as well. But the thing that annoys me is it's clearly scripted. They know when the mics are on. They know which over the mic's going to be on because there's very little chat elsewhere, except there's like specifically a lot of chat in the over.
There's no way that Tim Payne is just 180 overs consecutively of that level of chat, that volume and that kind of...
Yeah.
I would hope not, because everyone around him would go insane.
So what I would say is that I think his chat is good, but I think that's actually what sledging is. I think you hear what he's been saying around every cricket ground around the country. Yeah. I think how far Australia have taken that is you got Dave Warner, who's specifically the attack dog, who's legitimately just abusing people on the field. And that's what sledging was.
Applying human language to barking.
Yes.
That's what he was doing.
Yes.
So you take attack dog.
I still have this image of Warner where he ran out Abe de Villiers.
Oh, he was being physically restrained.
He's barking like a dog, a rabid dog.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And it was awesome, right? Is that what we're saying?
Fucking awesome. Yeah. Bring back those halcyon days.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing with the Payne and Finch thing, though, when he was saying across from one, I can't remember who was batting at it might have been Sharma, and he was saying to Finch under the lid, oh, Finch, you, those two overs I faced from you and Shield were the hardest overs I faced all year. And then Finch was talking back, going it's like saying something about his sister. That was a legitimate bit. They were doing a bit.
Yeah. It was like Abbott and Costello. Who's on first?
Exactly. I guess I like it.
What about this one from Graham Strain? He says, mine is to play a senior game of cricket with my daughter. Reckon that would be a fantastic experience. I reckon Graham's never been on that page before, because that's a legitimately nice thing. Yeah. Well, that's actually a really nice thing that would happen.
That's a lovely 2019 resolution.
I really like that. Okay, let's get into something stupid.
What about Dave G1000, who says, a positive alpha ratio, in brackets, alphaing more than being alphaed?
Yeah.
That means you're taking measurement or data on it, in which case you can't possibly be alpha, right?
And also your resolution is to proactively be aggressive to everyone you come into contact with, lest they do it to you first.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to kick off your 2019?
Well, it's driven by fear.
Well, it's fear driven, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I guess that goes without saying, doesn't it?
David Graham said, I'm on a one-man crusade to bring back bodyline to Masters cricket. He's saying bring it back like it existed. It went away for a bit in Masters cricket, but he's on a crusade. He's on a crusade, so it's a religious expedition.
It's going to last 40 years.
The bodyline jihad.
Yeah. John P. Nemchik says, got to acknowledge good cordial ratios at drinks more often. You've got to acknowledge good cordial ratios.
Oh, so that's be a better person. Yeah. It's one of those kind of resolutions.
Yep. Benji Slater says, mine is to think about a comeback no more than 10 times. Solid. There's a lot of,
it's good. I like that.
There's a lot of this stuff where you ask these questions out to, to the followers, and there's a lot of dark stuff in here. A lot of people are just reeling from their cricketing experience, And that's why we bring people together. All right, I'm just going to go to Instagram for the final one. Just going to scroll through. Chockey Buckets. Get the under-14s third grader out, clean bowled in the nets, and casually give him some advice, even though at 13 he's already double the player I will ever be.
You lost me at Chockey Buckets, to be honest. what's your username going to be? Oh,
Is it going to be my name? Yeah. Is it James Smith? No, it's Chockey Buckets.
Well, Chocolate Buckets was taken.
Yes.
So he had to shorten it. That's what happened. Yeah. All right. All right.
We're all right.
All right. Yeah, all right.
Well, what a meandering show that was if you made it.
No one's won here. Yeah. Okay. Well, 2019, we've started it in the right way. We've just started it in a way. Yeah. For those coming to Sydney, can't wait to see you guys come to the Sydney show, two Sydney shows, hopefully. Then we go to Brisbane and Canberra as well after that. So we'll be back next week, though. We're about to film next show back with Channel 7 this afternoon. You don't care about that because this has already happened by the time I listen to this. So signing off, Ian Higgins here, Sam Perry, Dave Edwards. See you next week.